Okay, if you turn to Proverbs 23, tonight we're going to continue our study of this book, and we're nearing the end of it. And tonight we're going to see a lot of warnings as to how to live day by day. And I like the instructions that we get in this chapter, so let's get right into it. The first three verses read, "When you sit down to eat with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you are a man given to appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for they are deceptive food." So those of you that are on diets, good for you. And those of us that have thought about diets, here we go. Eating is something that goes on three times a day, and it is essential for life. You can only go so long without food. So obviously it's something that the Lord works in and through, and He instructs us on what it is that we eat. So the point to this here is that when you are invited outside of your routine, you're invited into somebody's home, you're invited out to a ceremony or something, don't make yourself a glutton. Don't make yourself eat things that you normally wouldn't eat and you're sorry for it later on. And we all know what I'm saying here. You eat things, oh, that was so good. And then you go home and your stomach talks to you the rest of the night. Certain foods have certain effects on us, so we need to be very careful. And this instruction here is a warning. Don't desire rich foods. Daniel is a perfect example of this proverb here. Daniel and his friends refused the rich foods. I mean, he was a very fine-looking young man, a very physical fit, and was mentally sharp. And so they took him into the king's care and wanted him to be developed because they were going to fulfill a need for a king, and so they brought the delicacies to them. And they refused, even at being vulnerable to discipline action, they refused to eat the food. It wasn't kosher, first of all, but it wasn't the right stuff either. And he said, you know, bring me my veggies. And he did well. They did well. By over time, they looked at him, and it was amazing what God did. So we need to be careful. Some foods look really good, but they're not good for you. So be wise with the food, and you will feel better in the long run. Do not overwork to be rich, verse 4, because of your own understanding, cease. Now, simply put here, don't use your brain power to sit around and try to figure out how to make yourself rich. I have ran into so many people. I have family that does this very thing. They spend so much brain power to try to figure out how I can make a quick buck or make more money. And already the money they have has got them tripped up. This is what this proverb says. The reason behind this is that riches come and they go, but your life towards God is to be a constant. In verse 5, will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. You know, there is such a false security towards riches, isn't there? But yet in the capitalist society that we live in, that is the thing they chase after. It's talked about so much. And again, the Bible talks about it a lot too. We are to be very careful about money. The symbolism here with money being like a bird, it can just fly off. You can feel secure. You may have lots of it and feel secure, but it can disappear so quickly. Set your heart on money and you'll be unhappy. Do not eat the bread of a miser, verse 6, nor desire his delicacies. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, He says to you, but his heart is not with you. The morsel you have eaten, you will vomit up and waste your pleasant words. You know, it would be a mistake to accept hospitality from a stingy person. That's what's really being said here. For his lack of sincerity would make the evening very unpleasant. Have you ever been in that situation where you went over to dinner at somebody's house and they were a very stingy person and you just really were uncomfortable and you kept asking yourself, why am I here? The person considered here has an evil eye, the NIV says in verse 6 there, the stingy man. This miser, as it's put in the New King James Version, is ill-mannered and inhospitable. He's up to no good, really. He says, eat and drink, but that's not what he means. He's after something. I remember some of the times that I felt like this. Guyna and I, years ago, we don't so much anymore, but we used to get invitations to come over to the coast. Come over to this great hotel on the coast and have this great meal. And just give us an hour of your time. And we would go in there and we'd sit down, and it was true. The food was laid out. And I remember we got away from there one time with a suitcase. You know, some suitcase they were giving away if we'd come, and that's why we went. And we got the suitcase. Oh, I would have given the suitcase back just to not have to listen to them. They were selling something. They weren't hospitable. They wanted my money. Eating and drinking with people like this will be irritating and it'll be disgusting. That's what this proverb says. Any unpleasant conversation attempted would be lost because that's not what they're there for. They're there for other reasons. Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. You know, people either want to know truth or they don't. I'm kind of a black and a white guy, you know. They either want to hear truth or they don't. There's not really an in-between. You can't be argued into it. If you don't want to hear truth, it's really God that has to open that person up and that you be open to hearing it. Therefore, don't waste your time talking to someone who only wants to argue. That's the point here. Do not remove the ancient landmark, nor enter the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is mighty. He will plead their cause against you. Once again, the instruction warns against removing a boundary stone. That'd be like, you know, a survey marker for us here, and encroaching on the property of the defenseless. You know, the widow lives next door, and you see that she's not real capable. And so you go out in cover of darkness, and you move the boundary stone. You take the survey marker, and you move it over to your advantage. There's a warning here. They have a strong man that stands behind them. There is always a kinsman redeemer to redeem, and that redeemer of the poor and the helpless and the defenseless is God himself. So you better be very, very careful when you see this, taking advantage of somebody because you see them as weak. Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge. If we study and learn from the mind only, we'll forget that which we have learned, but if we get it into our hearts, it'll be there. It'll be there a long time. I'm amazed at some of the scripture memory that I've done in the past. At the appropriate times, it'll come up. Last night in the prison, that happened to me. I remembered a section of scripture that I hadn't told or pronounced in a memorization spot in a long time, and it just came back. Not all of it perfectly, but it was there enough that I went, wow, it is down in there. It is true that when you memorize it, you sink it into your heart. So what this proverb is saying, if you apply your heart to the instruction and your ears to the words of knowledge, that will make a whole lot of better than just having it in the mind. And there are people that just simply read the Bible for mental exercise. They know it mentally, but they don't know it with their heart. Do not withhold correction from a child. Verse 13, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. This is one that you tell your kid when you're getting ready to discipline them. This proverb, again, takes up the disciplines of raising our kids. And if you spank your child at the proper time and with the proper attitude, your kids will grow and not die. Now, what does that mean, not die? Well, spiritually, they won't die. I believe that if a child, the interpretation here is a godly child will not die. He will go into heaven. I believe the soul being delivered from hell is really a reference to the spiritual growth that a child learns as he or she is disciplined towards correction. And it starts at a very early age. I don't know, I think I've heard Dobson repeat over and over that by the time age 5 rolls around, that child is pretty well set in his ways of attitude and disciplines and that sort of thing. When we show discipline in our lives as parents, to be consistent in our discipline with our kids, it really directs them towards a disciplined life in theirs. I know that when I was younger, my mom and dad, especially with my mom, I heard the word discipline quite a bit, and I'd think about it. I want to be disciplined, but I'm not sure what that is, as a younger kid. My son, if your heart is wise, verse 15, my heart will rejoice, indeed I myself. Yes, my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. You know, when you love God with all of your heart and your mind, your soul, which Jesus instructs us to do, then you will fear Him in order not to displease Him. That's kind of what we were talking about on Sunday. Allow zeal to reign in your life. Could I encourage you that? Unbridled zeal in your life for God. Because as you seek after Him, and I like to use this word hot, as you seek after Him in a hot manner, you'll be blessed. For surely there is a hereafter, he says in verse 18, and your hope will not be cut off. You know, hope in God, and it will never be cut off. We can hope in God and know that God is our eternal salvation. He is our insurance inheritance. That hope should take us through anything that comes along in life. I've talked to too many people through the years of walking with God, and I have never, ever heard anybody regret or talk about regretting the time they've spent with God. I have never had a person come to me and say, I wish I'd have never came to that Wednesday night Bible study where we went through the Bible verse by verse. Never. But I have talked to a lot of people that have regretted the sin that has gotten into their lives. Hear, my son, and be wise, and guide your heart in the way. Do not mix with wine bibbers or with gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Well, I guess overeating, overdrinking, and oversleeping result in poverty, both spiritually and materially. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother, verse 22, when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. I like that. Also, wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice. It takes work and discipline to become a godly person, does it not? And that discipline starts at a very early age. If we obey our parents, that's really a good start. Now, I wished I would have learned godly discipline at a very early age. If we respect our parents when they grow old, there is a blessing in it too. And by the way, again, I've repeated this before, it doesn't qualify here in the scriptures of whether they are good or bad or deserve it or Christian or not. We're to respect our elders. My son, give me your heart, verse 26, and let your eyes observe my ways. This would be my prayer for my Lord. I would say, Lord, please help me to follow after you, not from a distance, but right up close. Help me to see you clearly and observe your ways so that I can be more like you. This is what a son should desire, to be like his father. For a harlot is a deep pit, and a seductress is a narrow well. She also lies in wait as for a victim, and increases the unfaithful among men. You know, the deep pit is a reference to Sheol, which would be the gateway to hell. So I think it's a very sobering thought that's being expressed here, a very serious warning. There's such a disastrous thing involved with adultery. I was listening to the counsel of a pastor that has counseled many, many years, many, many marriages, many, many adulterous and adultery type situations. And he made a comment that really is true. He said that even after 20 years later, even when there's been forgiveness, the situations have been resolved and taken care of. He said he's met with these folks, and they still to that day regret having gone there, having made that mistake of adultery with another man or woman, and how deeply it hurt even then. Fornication, being sex outside of marriage when you're single, I believe is one of the things that America promotes. Fornication and adultery situation. We see it on the TV, if you watch TV or you watch stuff like that, and I hope you don't. But we see that in America, and it's promoted as, you know, this is something you might try if it fits for you. And this next section I want to address, because these two verses seem to really single the women out. So I want to talk to the women. First of all, you are mentioned here as the key in this proverb. So most importantly, don't be one of these. And know that a man is weak in this area. He has a responsibility, of course. I'm not giving him an excuse whatsoever. But you have a responsibility to turn from being an immoral, or at least promoting an immoral lifestyle, and turn the men off, or at least turn away from you. The reason that I think this is so strongly addressed to the woman, the harlot, the seductress, she, on and on in that verse, is because how God has wired us as men and women. And women have a role in society, and that is the one area that we have, in particular in the Western world, let down on. the equality isn't exactly the same in this area. I don't believe. Now, I'm speaking from the viewpoint of a man, of course, but I see so strong in the scriptures the obligation and responsibility of the woman to say no to the guys, to set a precedence, to establish a walk of morality and godliness. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Verse 29. Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine. Those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. You know, if you look on TV, it's promoted. It really looks pretty going into this crystal goblet, you know. They get the camera right down there, and it's poured in this wine, this red sloshing around, and then they swirl it around. They look at the lights on it perfectly. It's almost like your taste buds come alive, you know. People get all hyped up talking about, hey, did you check out the new wine tasting place up at so-and-so vineyards? But yet this proverb says all of that is to entice you to fall into the trap, because it says at the last it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. That's a snake. In fact, that's a poisonous snake. So, my friends, be very careful with alcohol. Your eyes will see strange things, verse 33, and your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or like one who lies at the top of the mast, saying, they struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake, that I may seek another drink? You know, I have seen statistics that say one out of every 10 Americans is an alcoholic. That's pretty sobering, isn't it? I actually would be willing to say it's probably even higher. We live in a society that accepts and promotes social drinking as the thing to do. Many hide behind the mask of being a social drunk. I know this area very well. I was there at one time in my life, and if it wasn't for Jesus Christ interceding in 1981, I was well on my way to being an alcoholic. Alcohol has severely affected my family and my friends. I have friends that are alcoholics. I have friends that are dead now from alcoholism. I have family that socially drink to the point that it's almost ridiculous. I minister in jail and with couples that will tell me it all started with alcohol and the use of. As far as I'm concerned, I would never touch this stuff. My counsel to you would be to never touch the stuff either. But I'm one-sided towards it. Conservatively, as a Christian, just leave it alone. Do you have the liberty to drink as a Christian? Absolutely, you do. Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 10:23, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. I would say, and this is coming from an old pastor that just hates what alcohol does to people, I would say that alcohol is the number one on the list of the liberals. Number one to avoid. I got a call, I think it was 6:30 or so yesterday morning. I won't go into details because it's personal, but there was a person that was caught drunk driving, in jail, needed help with bail. Just another of many situations Luckily, that person didn't harm anybody else. We have prisons that are full of people that are caught up in alcoholism. Alcohol and drugs is a downfall of America right now. There's a lot of reasons why, but it is the issue that we are dealing with. Proverbs chapter 24, let's get right into it. Verse 1 there, it says, "Do not be envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them." So the first thing I think of here is, who is the evil man? Well, anybody outside of the righteousness of Christ would be an evil man, evil woman. That is, if you're not a Christian, don't be envious of them. If you are a Christian, I should say that differently. If you are a Christian, don't be envious of the non-Christian that has things going for them. They have nothing. What they have is temporary. There's no greater person than Jesus Christ and His example to follow after. And if you try to be like anybody else, you will be following a sinner. That is, if you're following after a non-Christian. And I guess better to put this in perspective is how Hollywood sells us a bill of goods. They put these people up on pedestals that have atrocious lifestyles. And yet they're promoted as the ones to live after, or live for, want to be like. Oh, it's so sad. Jesus spent time with sinners, it's true. Jesus spent most of His time with people that were broken and messed up. It's true. But every time Jesus spent time with folks, it was valuable time in that He was able to bring them up to a higher level than where they were at. He would either heal them or direct them in their life to change. And we should be that way too. Don't hang around with people that will change you unless it is into the image of Christ. Amen? "For their heart devises violence, and their lips talk of trouble making." The bottom line in this verse here is that every person except those that are Christian are really dead spiritually, and they have a wicked heart. We're born with a wicked heart. And it takes the Spirit of God to come into that heart to change. And it really doesn't get completely changed until we get to be in His presence. He begins that change when we ask Him in. But the cool thing is we're sealed in that heart for eternity. "Through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches." So, if we will spend our time learning wisdom, learning the Scriptures, you will be established like no others in life. I'm glad that the Lord instructed me, drilled this into my head early on in my walk, and now, some 30 years later, I'm really seeing the fruit of being in the Scriptures day after day after day. "A wise man is strong. Yes, a man of knowledge increases strength." Verse 5. There is many a man that is physically strong. My dad used to tell me, he said, "Son, don't go around picking fights." He would say, "You always, without missing this one time, you'll always find a guy, run into a guy that is stronger than you. And so therefore, you'll get a bloody nose and a black eye." And I didn't want a bloody nose or a black eye, so I didn't start it out in the first place. No greater the strength than to be wise in the Lord. Amen? "For by wise counsel you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety." So the point is that for victory, strategy is more important than strength. If you want to have victory, strategy is the key. It's more important than having an army of huge numbers. And we see this in war games. In fact, if you go to West Point, there are some biblical battles that the West Point students study because of the strategies behind them. God was behind it too. So they look at these and they say, now there is military victory. It is not necessarily in strength. We've seen large armies go by the wayside because they approached it in the wrong way. Verse 7 says, wisdom is too lofty for a fool. He does not open his mouth in the gate. You know, the Hebrew word translated fool literally means rebel. While the gate refers to the place where wisdom was dispensed and counsel given in Solomon's day. And it was for a long time. If you wanted to find the judge or find somebody wise, you would go to the gate of the city. That would be, most cities had walls and only one way in. So the judges would sit at the gate. There can be a tendency for us to be critical. As this proverb here, it says, wisdom is too lofty for a fool. He does not open his mouth in the gate. You know, there's a tendency to be critical or very sarcastic, especially in our youth. We think we know it all. Nobody can tell us anything. But according to this verse, this type of individual will never set in that gate. You'll never achieve that position of true leadership or authority. It's important when we're young to submit instead of being a rebel or a fool. He who plots to do evil will be called a schemer, verse 8. I hope that you don't want to ever have the nickname as a schemer, because schemer are people that plots evil. The devising of foolishness is sin, and the scoffer is an abomination to men. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. You know, there are some really important proverbs here for this. A couple of verses here. How do we deal with trouble when it comes right up into our face? Do you start to faint? Wilt? And we all have troubles. You know, I started this evening praying about, there's probably some things we've gone through since Sunday as folks, and there's been battles, and maybe some of those battles have made you faint or wilt. Pray that you be a stronger person. That's the first advice I have to share with you. Trials don't make or break a person. They don't. They don't destroy you, wipe you out. They simply gauge to show you where you're at in your walk with the Lord. Take a look at that, at each time you deal with the trial. Okay, this one here, God is pointing out how close I am to Him or how far away. Jeremiah is the book that I just completed, I told you earlier. And in Jeremiah 12, verse 5, it says this. Interesting little verse. If you have run with the footmen, they have wearied you, and they have wearied you, then how can you contend with horses? That makes sense. And if in the land of peace in which you trusted, they wearied you, then how will you go into the floodplains of the Jordan? In other words, if you're exhausted by problems that are facing you today, what will you do when even bigger problems come your way? When I recognize the trial that's coming at me, when I'm dealing with an obvious trial that has come up, I start praying and asking the Lord to strengthen me first off and to deal with this problem. Allow me to follow after Him as He reveals to me how to deal with this problem. And lo and behold, I find that I'm getting stronger and stronger as the time goes on. I can rely on the fact also that God will not ever put more on to me than I can handle. You see, that's the thing that really gets us. We fear, in the face of a trial, we fear that which we cannot handle. And so, really, there's a lack of trust there. But God tells us in 1 Corinthians 10:13, no temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation, he will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. You know, if we are faithful children, we believe that we have a faithful Father. And so, if you're dealing with a trial, if you have something coming at you, turn to him. He's your strength. Verse 11, deliver those who are drawn toward death and hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the heart consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to each man according to his deeds? You know, those that are going to danger, even to death, we are to warn and give the message of hope. Now, what came into play with this verse here, what my mind started thinking about was our neighbors. We have neighbors that live all around us. And if we really believe that there is a hell, do we know where our neighbors are going? If we turn from them and say nothing as a Christian, God knows our thoughts and he will bring us into account for not witnessing to them. That's what this proverb is saying. This is a very clear warning to those that know God and have the message of hope. We are to share that message. We're to share truth. We're to pray for boldness. This is a statistic. I think I shared it earlier, but it's a statistic that is really a shocker. 95% of Christians today, as have been polled, have never shared their faith. That's amazing. And yet we hold the message of hope within us, in our hands. What we study, the message of hope of eternity. We live in a dying world. We live in a world that has a system that is leading people to death. Think of your neighbor around you. And if you don't know them, get to know them. If you haven't shared Jesus with them, ask for boldness. Ask for the opportunity to share with those neighbors. Because one day, God is going to hold us accountable for the opportunities he's given us. The doors that have been opened, and we haven't said anything. My son, eat honey because it is good. And the honeycomb, which is sweet to your taste, so shall the knowledge of wisdom be to your soul. If you have found it, there is a prospect, and your hope will not be cut off. You know, people tell me that they just don't like to read the word. They have a hard time with retaining what they've read, or they just don't understand what it is that they read. I hear this all the time. I have a response to that. If you will pray and ask God to make the Word of God like honey to your soul and read every day, you will develop a hunger that will really surprise you. It will become something that you will miss if you don't do it. Do not lie in wait, O wicked man, verse 15, against the dwelling of the righteous. Do not plunder his resting place, for a righteous man may fall 7 times and rise again, but the wicked shall fall by calamity. It would be futile and self-defeating to mistreat God's people, for they survive. The wicked do not. this again applies to the thoughts that I was thinking about my neighbors. You know, I've shared every door. At one time, I felt so burdened because I hadn't done it. I just went around my neighborhood, and I shared Jesus. Every single one of them were kind. I invited them to a Bible study that I was trying to start. Nobody showed up. And as far as I know, nothing ever became of what I did. But boy, did I feel better. Because I was obedient to the Lord. There's a warning in this Proverbs, these two, 15 and 16 that I just read. It is against attacking the righteous. To attack them is to attack God and His program. And that will always fail. Ultimately, the righteous will triumph. You might say, well, you know, it seems like the wicked are always getting ahead. Well, yeah, there are times that they do. They do gain, but it's a short gain. The righteous will always prevail. Why? Because we serve a holy God. And He's alive. Amen?
Amen.
Let's see here. We're at 17 and 18. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls. And do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it and it displeases him, and he turn away with wrath from him. Wow. This is kind of a sobering one, isn't it? We are promised all of these victories I've just been talking about. The righteous are saved. The righteous are protected. And ultimately, the righteous win. But here's a warning that if we get arrogant or prideful in our victory, God doesn't like that. Israel is a perfect example. And there are many times that when they got arrogant and prideful because they were God's chosen, that God would use the enemy to bring them in, to bring them around. You will see God use your enemy in victory to keep you from being arrogant and prideful. Don't celebrate somebody's failings. Do not fret because of evildoers, verse 19, nor be envious of the wicked, for there will be no prospect for the evil man. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. So don't worry if the evil man seems to be getting away with a lot. And it does seem that way. His days are numbered, though. His time's limited. Verse 21, my son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those given to change, for their calamity will rise suddenly. And who knows the rain those two can bring? Yeah, people should fear both God and the government, for both punish rebels. The government is used by God to punish people that are wrong or rebels and won't behave. We know this because of what Peter said other places, but Peter says it very clearly in 2 chapter verse 17. He says, honor all people. Love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. It's about as clear as you can get. On Sunday, we talked about what Paul said to Titus in chapter 3, verse 1. Remind them, Titus, remind those Cretans to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey. If you run with the rebels, you will get caught up in their destruction. That's as simple as that proverb is there. 23, these things also belong to the wise. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. He who says to the wicked, you are righteous, him the people will curse. Nations will abhor him. But those who rebuke the wicked will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. He who gives a right answer kisses the lips. We should never show partiality in judgment. Nothing that will bring the fall of justice system down quicker than to corrupt the judicial system. Buy off the judges. Buy off the jury. I mean, that's a mess. If they are wicked, they should be dealt with and not let go. There are those that are corrupt in the, we've seen the stories of, judges that are bought off by corporations to turn the blind eye. We've seen law enforcement officers that are bought off to not arrest the wicked. And there's a warning here, a very strong one. And then he ends it with verse 26. He says, "He who gives a right answer kisses the lips." Well, kissing on the lips was a symbol in their day of true friendship, but it's not ours. We don't practice that type of friendship anymore. Prepare your outside work, verse 27. Make it fit for yourself in the field, and afterward build your house. In other words, Solomon said to make sure that necessities were met before conveniences were added. Some people get that backwards. They'll buy all the goodies before they really get the necessities sound. And part of that is the way we have been given a freedom to borrow. Where we can, especially in the younger couples, they'll go out and buy things that they really can't afford, but they can buy them because they have buying power through credit. Do not be a witness against your neighbor without cause, for would you deceive with your lips? Do not say, "I will do to him just as he has done to me. I will render to the man according to his work." You know, this something that we're having really to deal with in our society. This is really an area that we're dealing with where we are not to bring trouble to a neighbor. We're to be friendly. But yet a lot of people don't even know their neighbors. And if they hear something, they may prejudge that neighbor, who he is or what's going on. Don't live with an attitude, an eye for an eye. I'm going to do to him as he does to me. No, we're not to live that way. If our neighbor comes home and he's playing loud music and it happens to be Middle Eastern music and he's got all these weird attire upon him and you hear some strange sounds going on and five times you hear a call to prayer and all that sort of stuff, don't prejudge him as he is a guy riding around with a time bomb or getting ready to do something we won't even go there. We're to be careful at prejudging folks. Verse 30. I went by the field of the lazy man, and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding, and there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. Laziness, I'm going to be a little hard right here, but laziness has become a very large hold on Americans. We have a society that has not learned to work. I know I'm an old guy, but I was brought up to learn how to work. I mean, that was my dad instilled that on me at a very early age. And at 15, I was working in a service station and going to school too. I believe that we have become lazy with all of the success, all of the programs, that if you don't succeed, you can still eat. I was just talking to somebody today. They're going to school on a program. Why? Well, just because the program's there. He can get this program and go and learn and all this sort of thing. I guess that's not bad, but we seem to have a nation that is promoting an easier way. We had better wake up and get tough once again, or we're going to lose it all. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. You know, sleep is something that requires discipline also. We heard Sue Ann sharing with us that she just sleeps like the dead, you know. That would be nice, but it really requires a discipline. If you don't have good sleep habits, you need to develop them. It takes work at doing that. If you love to sleep, on the other hand, this proverb here says, you will not accomplish all that you want in your day. So if you work at a job that requires you to get up early, you have to go to bed early. You can't just play until late and then go to bed and expect your body to be rested. And on the same way, you can't get everything accomplished in your day if you choose to stay in bed. You choose to sleep less and gain, or sleep in and be poor. That's the proverb. And farmers know that very well. Loggers and some of the folks I've grown up with. That's it for tonight.